Well, it's good to be with you all this morning. Hope you're finding ways to stay cool in this intense heat wave. Earlier this week, I was listening to the Daily Podcast, which is from the New York Times, and they did a two-part series on cancel culture and how this movement was in response to providing accountability and justice and calling out people who were abusing their power and privilege. And while there's complexity in this process, it's quickly evolved into a swift and sudden form of retributive justice. If you call the cops on a black man who's a peaceful bird watcher, or you attack someone for wearing a face mask, then you end up losing your job and being shamed on social media. And they brought up this question of, you know, whether that sort of justice is appropriate. Is this actually helping move people towards positive change in how they carry themselves in society? You know, is there even any space and room left for mercy? And for us, especially as people who Jesus has invited to practice and be defined by mercy, how do we balance and hold both justice and mercy together? And so before we continue, I want to give you a moment to reflect on mercy. You know, what makes it difficult to practice and extend mercy to others? You know, what makes mercy so challenging? And I'll give you a moment to reflect on that at home and offer any of your thoughts in the live chat as well. And as you continue to offer your thoughts in the chat, you know, I understand the difficulty, you know, of what it's like to try to let go of being wronged. Maybe if the other person hasn't shown any remorse, do they really deserve mercy? And I like Eugene Peterson's translation, an image of how he describes God's mercy in Luke chapter 1. He says that God's mercy flows in wave after wave on those who are in awe before him. It captures the unrelenting nature of God's mercy, right? That God's compassion and forgiveness just keep flowing, and there's no way to stop it. A couple of weeks ago, our family was able to escape Austin for a few days, and we headed to a beach down in South Texas. And I think we all needed to do something that would take us out of our home routine for the past few months. But we also had some anxiety of what travel and going on vacation in a pandemic would look like. And when we first checked out the beach in the afternoon, it was packed. And we were thinking, maybe we shouldn't have come. But when we went back later in the evening, we found the perfect time to go on a weekday was between 5 and 8 p.m. Most of the people had left by then. It was much easier to have a whole section to ourselves. And we didn't have to worry about getting sunburned. Of course, one of our rituals on any beach, which many of you all have done before, is building a sandcastle. And then making sure we build multiple rings of walls and digging huge trenches in order to stop the waves from destroying the castle. And of course, it's a pointless exercise, because at some point the waves will break through and bring it all down. And I think that's why waves are such a great image and metaphor for God's mercy. It just keeps flowing. It's unrelenting. It can't be stopped, even if we try. And yet in our lives, in my life, you know, we still try our best to stop that wave of mercy sometimes, whether it's towards others or towards ourselves. And so the question I want us to consider this morning is, how might we be blocking the flow of mercy in our lives? You know, what are some of the barriers that we've built that are limiting that flow of mercy? In the text for this morning, which is in Matthew 15, 10 through 28, Jesus reflects on things that limit mercy. And in a twist of irony, we see Jesus himself experience his own teaching. And so we start in verse 10. Then he called the crowd to him and said to them, "Listen and understand. It is not what goes into the mouth that defiles a person, but it's what comes out of the mouth that defiles. Then the disciples approached and said to him, "Do you know that the Pharisees took offense when they heard what you said?" So to give some context, right before Jesus teaches here, he gets grilled by the religious leaders on why his disciples didn't follow the religious rituals by washing their hands before they ate. And I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have had this argument if they were living through a pandemic, right? In that scenario, everyone just needs to wash their hands, end of story. But here, this is Jesus' response to the religious leaders and how much emphasis they placed on rituals and rules. They were more concerned about external practices and were convinced in their minds that how you behaved and how you acted reflected how spiritual you really were. And I'm not saying that these rituals weren't meaningful and purposeful in their practice of faith, but these rituals became a barrier for them to extend mercy. They were using these external expectations as a way to determine whether someone deserved mercy or not. And so for us, in order to increase our flow of mercy, we're invited to examine the expectations we've placed on others. You know, how do our expectations determine whether or not we extend mercy? I think at a deeper level, what the religious leaders adopted was a belief that if they could simply achieve and perform their way to earning God's love, then they actually wouldn't need mercy. Like if we can do the right action, follow the right ritual, perform the right way, we can bypass the need for mercy because we've earned it. And so they placed this expectation of performance on everyone else. And if anyone couldn't meet their expectation of how they were able to perform, it became difficult for them to express mercy. And I can relate to that. You know, for me, I grew up in a faith and culture that emphasized performance. I was defined by what I did and how well I did it. You know, how many church meetings I went to, how many verses I could memorize, how many times I prayed that week. And to be honest, I excelled at that. You know, I performed in a way that met the expectations that were put on me. And it cultivated the same belief that if I performed well enough, I didn't really need mercy. And that impacted how willing I would be to extend mercy to others. And because I was in that environment, it was easy for me to put that same expectation of performance on other people. And when performance becomes the highest priority, shame and guilt become effective tools in that setting and easily overpower mercy. And yet throughout Scripture, we see reminders that God always prioritizes mercy over performance. God desires mercy over our sacrifice. And for us, maybe a practice we can try this week is to reflect on the people that we're having a difficult time extending mercy to, and write out a list of what expectations we've put on them. Maybe it's an expectation of performance or an expectation of them fulfilling their responsibilities. Maybe it's an expectation of mutuality or an expectation of them having self-awareness. And then spend some time examining those expectations, right? Do our expectations focus on external behaviors, or are they dealing with internal motivations? Are they becoming a burden that ends up limiting our ability to practice mercy? Maybe we're holding so tightly to certain expectations that there's no way to let go and also hold on to mercy. And in our text, Jesus was challenging the external expectations being placed on people that ended up limiting the flow of mercy. And then we continue in verse 21. Jesus left that place and went away to the district of Tyre and Sidon. Just then, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and started shouting, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." But he did not answer her at all. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she keeps shouting after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, help me." He answered, "It's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." And so this story is one of the more difficult ones to process because, you know, Jesus has just finished teaching that showing mercy shouldn't be based on external expectations. And yet Jesus here ends up doing the very thing that he told everyone not to do. And on top of that, when we read this interaction, it seems like Jesus is being a jerk about it. He ignores this woman. His disciples tell him to get rid of her. He even tells her that she's not part of the right demographic group for him to help or offer mercy. And he even uses a derogatory label. And there have been a couple of interpretations about what's happening here. And the one I grew up with, where the priority was to not paint Jesus in a negative light, was that this was just a test. You know, Jesus wasn't really ignoring her. You know, he was pushing her away, calling her names, because he wanted to test her faith. And he was also being extremely harsh to her in order to test his disciples and reflect back to them what their bias actually looked like. Right? So that's the "it was all a test" explanation. Other theologians invite us to sit in the uncomfortable tension that perhaps Jesus was a product of his cultural upbringing and context, which demonstrates his humanity. I mean, there was a lot of bad history and conflict between these two cultures, you know, between those living in Tyre and Sidon and those living in Israel. And using the label of dog in that context wasn't meant to conjure up images of cute little puppies. The dogs were scavengers and pests and not pleasant to be around. And so I've been trying to sit in the tension of that possibility this week, where Jesus was actually coming to grips with the reality of his own cultural bias. And for us, that's our invitation as well, to consider how mercy can flow more fully when we're able to confront our biases and blind spots and grow in our understanding of others. You know, if we're really honest about our biases, like, what comes up for us? Are we less willing to extend mercy to people who have opposing political views or people from a different cultural background? Are we biased against people who represent the upper 1% of the social and working class? Do we think they deserve less mercy because they make way too much money? You know, what biases are we aware of? And then there are biases that we might not be aware of that have seeped into our mind unknowingly and still have an impact on how we practice mercy towards others. Mahzarin Banaji is a social psychologist who taught at Harvard, and she wrote the book Blind Spot, Hidden Biases of Good People. And some of you might be familiar with her work around implicit bias. And she talks about how our mind is a difference-seeking machine, that our minds naturally look for differences in others in order to help us navigate the world around us. And while noticing differences can help us survive in the world, usually by avoiding those differences, that also ends up creating blind spots and biases because we end up filling in the gaps of what we don't know. Now, she gives an example in the form of a riddle, which some of you might have heard before. You know, she put this riddle online and found that 80% of people couldn't answer it correctly. And the riddle goes like this. A father and a son were in a car accident. The father dies at the scene. The boy is rushed to a hospital. And in the hospital, the operating surgeon looks at the boy and says, "I can't operate on this boy. He's my son. How can this be if the father just died?" And the first time I heard this, I remember my answer was that, you know, the son had been adopted by the father who died. And so the surgeon was his biological father. But that wasn't correct. The right answer is that the surgeon was the boy's mother. And her point is that even though we're all aware of the reality that there are female surgeons, like we all know that. And even if we have a more expansive framework of gender roles and careers, our minds are still influenced by the thumbprint of our culture, where we tend to associate surgeon with a man. And it takes work to uncover those cultural biases and draw attention to them. And one of the values that drives her research and how to move people through implicit bias is the value of understanding, which she says is a more scientific word for compassion or empathy. And part of developing understanding can start with simply exposing your mind to things and people that you don't know much about. And she gives a specific practice of cycling through a series of 1,000 pictures of people from very different backgrounds on her computer screensaver. So maybe seeing a visual of a farmer in Iowa might make her stop and consider how she might start to understand their context and experience that is so different from hers. And so for us, you know, in our attempt to increase our flow of mercy by confronting our biases, what might a practice of understanding look like for us this week? You know, maybe it's seeking understanding of a certain life experience that we haven't been through, or a relational trauma that we don't have any context for. Maybe it's seeking understanding of cultural backgrounds and upbringings that we're not familiar with. Maybe it's seeking understanding of what it's like to be a different gender or ethnicity in the workplace. And in some ways, that's what we see with Jesus' experience. He actually chose to travel to this region. So even though he had some cultural bias that was being exposed, he was actually putting himself and his disciples in a place where they could grow in their understanding of the other. And then we close in verse 27, where the woman responds, and she said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered her, "Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed instantly. There are only two people in the gospel texts where Jesus mentions them as having great faith. This woman here is one of them. And the other was a Roman centurion, a military officer, who approached Jesus to heal one of his servants. And it's interesting that both of these individuals were outside of the initial assumed target audience. Right? These two were considered to be foreigners or outsiders, people who weren't supposed to be part of their faith community. And yet this marginalized woman, who I think is the hero in this story, actually understood Jesus's role and purpose, perhaps even better than he did in that moment. And she recognized that God's mercy extends beyond any boundaries or divisions or categories that have been created between people. And for us, the invitation to increase our flow of mercy is to recognize that God's mercy is meant for all people, including ourselves. You know, in some ways, the woman's request and need for mercy is actually what gives her understanding that God's mercy is available for everyone. This is how the social justice activist Bryan Stevenson puts it. He says, "There is a strength, a power even, in understanding brokenness, because embracing our brokenness creates a need and desire for mercy, and perhaps a corresponding need to show mercy. When you experience mercy, you learn things that are hard to learn otherwise. You see things you can't otherwise see. You hear things you can't otherwise hear. you begin to recognize the humanity that resides in each of us. And it's in that understanding that we are all deserving and meant to receive God's mercy. And I think that's why Jesus taught that blessed are the merciful, because they will be shown mercy. Not in a transactional way, right? It's not that if you show mercy, then someone else will show you mercy. But it's more about this mutual interconnected cycle of giving and receiving mercy, knowing that if we ourselves need mercy, then everyone deserves mercy. And so Vox, this is my prayer for us. May we spend this week considering our posture and practice of mercy towards ourselves and towards others. When we have a desire to cancel certain people in our lives, in our society, may we also be reminded of the waves of God's mercy that are unrelenting, like the waves of a beach, the tides coming in and going out, a cycle of giving and receiving mercy that can hopefully shape our lives in whatever we're currently experiencing in the days and weeks to come. And we ask all this in the love of the Father, the mercy of the Son, and the accompaniment of the Holy Spirit. Amen.